Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Shuttle Pod. This is our 21st episode, and we're recording on Wednesday, August 17th, 2016. Today, we have a newsy episode for you. Tons going on in the Star Trek universe right now. Today, we're going to talk to you about conventions, what happened a couple weeks ago at Star Trek Las Vegas, including some awesome panels by first-timers Whoopi Goldberg and Kirstie Alley, and some news about a new Deep Space Nine documentary. And then looking forward to Mission New York, CBS and Reed Pop's newest convention taking place in 2 weeks in New York. We're also going to talk a bit about Star Trek Beyond. It's been about a month now since the film's come out. How's it been doing in the box office at home and internationally? And finally, the biggest news of the hour is, of course, Star Trek Discovery. We've been getting a ton of new information from the showrunner Brian Fuller. We've learned about the time frame, the characters, more about the ship. And so we're going to just discuss what we know so far and what we hope to see in the future. So guys, STLV, Star Trek Las Vegas, how was your con this year?
I thought it was terrific. There were a lot of highlights. I absolutely enjoyed being... Oh, this is Jared, by the way, your co-host. Wonderful intro, by the way, Kayla. It's glad to have you as captain of the ship. For me, the absolute highlight was being able to see Whoopi Goldberg. I thought that was just a treasure of an event to be able to be a part of that.
She was pretty awesome on stage, and it was cool because it was her first con.
Yeah, but it definitely wasn't her first time in front of a crowd. I mean, you could tell her training as a stand-up comedian was just, she's got reflex. She's like Bruce Lee, right? Watching like Bruce Lee's reflexes with martial arts, the way that she can work a crowd, and it constantly has all kinds of jokes on the launch pad that are just ready to go at any moment.
Oh, totally. And some amazing, sometimes self-deprecating humor that I thought resonated really well.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. People love that kind of thing. So that was delightful to be there and to see her and to hear the laughter of everyone who was supporting her. And then, of course, when she invited the three Guinans up on stage, that must have been wonderful for those women.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just for people at home who may not know what we're talking about, there were three women that were dressed as Guinan in the audience, one of whom was online to ask Whoopi a question. And she ultimately just had them all come up on stage and took pictures with them and hugged them and probably made their year.
The thing I love the most about that is she immediately got a selfie with them, and she said, none of my friends at work said that nobody would come up dressed as me, and I can't wait to prove them wrong. And I love that, her friends at work are the other ladies
on the View.
Yeah.
No, that was awesome. That was the highlight of the whole convention for me.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, no question at all. Unfortunately, I missed Kirstie Alley, and it was also her first time ever coming to a convention. So if you guys could catch me up on some of the things I missed, not being able to see our beloved Savick, that would be terrific.
So yeah, Kirstie was fantastic on stage. It was really great to see her there. And the thing about Whoopi Goldberg, which is sort of my segue here into Kirstie, is that, Whoopi was originally a fan of the show before she was Guinan. She talked a lot about her journey into getting onto the show and trying to convince Gene Roddenberry that she should be on the show, and she wanted to be a regular character. And so it was really cool to see someone like that with that kind of energy up on stage, representing the Trekkies. And Kirstie is obviously different than that, but what stuck out to me was the fact that it really seems like she had done her homework before coming to the con. It was really clear to me that she had gone back recently and watched The Wrath of Khan before coming to the convention, because she was able to pick out specific scenes and specific moments and talk about them at length. And obviously it's a film that she would have filmed a very long time ago. So it was obvious that things were fresh in her mind. And I feel like she's probably a bit nervous to come to a Star Trek convention, but I felt like she wanted to make a good impression on the Trekkies, and I think she did. I thought that was really cool of her to have done that.
Absolutely, and she did say she was having such a good time that she would come back. Everybody was so nice to her, and she was, she was thrilled with the way things were turning out.
Oh,
So that's really cool.
That's fantastic. Well, I'll be able to see it the next one then, I hope.
Yeah, hopefully.
I hope so. I always loved Savick. I was always disappointed that things didn't work out with that character.
Yeah, it sticks out like such a sore thumb.
Yeah, it does.
To use a cliche.
Yeah, poor Robin.
Yeah, it's hard ears to fill.
Yeah, it really was. It really was.
To the point where, you know, I think they maybe could have just made a different character entirely to be, you know, with David on the Grissom for Star Trek 3.
Yeah. It would have been hard, though.
I mean, it would have.
Yeah, it was supposed to. The movie starts right after the.
Yeah,
it leads right into it. Like,
I'm sorry, but I'm still laughing about big ears to fill.
Oh, thank you. That's funny. I didn't come up with that. People said that about Tim Russ when Voyager started.
Oh, it's just so clever. Okay,
oh.
I'm curious.
Which is true, because anybody who puts on those ears is always compared to Leonard Nimoy.
Well, yeah,
and that's an impossible act to follow.
Yeah, it is.
No one could replace him. They could only succeed him.
Yeah.
No, but there were a handful of people. I mean, we're going off topic now, but there were only a handful of people I felt that really can pull off Vulcan really well.
Yeah, I agree.
Leonard, Mark Leonard, Kirstie.
Yeah.
Like, Tim Russ was good, but I didn't love the Tuvok portrayal myself too much.
You know, and it's surprising to me that Kirstie is such a good Vulcan because her actual personality, like Kirstie Alley, is so different. It's so not Vulcan.
Yeah.
Well, and they also did a thing with, and it's, you know, I don't know how canonical it is. It's in the novelization and there's a deleted scene of it, but Savick was supposed to be half Vulcan, half Romulan.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like you take the challenges that Spock has of just being half human and you ratchet it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I think that's one of the reasons why he, you know, takes her as his protege. Is because he understands, you know, this in part what struggles she might have.
Yeah, and I would have liked to have seen more of that mentoring later on. It would have been cool if they could have continued that. And we could have seen their relationship develop more.
So,
anyway, totally off topic.
Back to STLV. Whoopi and Kirstie were the big headliner stars. But the biggest news to come out of the convention was Ira Stephen Baer telling us that there's going to be a Deep Space Nine documentary.
Which
is so cool.
Fantastic. I can't wait to see that. I mean, Deep Space Nine is my favorite series, and I think it came at a turning point in TV where, thanks to the internet, they were able to do serialization the way I think Ronald D. Moore and Michael Piller and other guys wanted to do on TNG, and they were able to actually do it. So it'll be fun to see how they change that. Also, it'd be interesting to see if they say anything about, you know, because the other sci-fi show about a space station that was going on at the same time, which was serialized and, you know, periodically accused Deep Space Nine of stealing some of their good ideas. It'd be interesting to see if they talk about that rivalry.
Mm. I'm also intensely curious to see, like, I don't know if everybody knows this, but, like, Ira said that one of the fun things about this documentary was that he got the entire DS9 writing staff together and they wrote a theoretical first episode of the 8th season.
Oh, wow.
Which we are going to get, I guess, glimpses of.
Oh, cool.
In this new documentary. Right, Kel? Is that how
it sounds like the actors are unaware of this, so I don't think the actors will be reprising their roles, but they'll tell us the story that would have happened. And they said that they created, Ira said that they created a story for each of the main characters, but he said that they forgot Quark.
What?
Yeah.
So, how could they forget Quark?
I know. So, like, every main character has a new story for episode 1 of season 8, except for Quark. Poor Armin.
Wow.
Boo.
Wow. Well, you know, maybe that's because they had so much they wanted to dedicate the entire second episode of season 8 to him.
Of course. Yeah. It's going to be a whole...
Ferengis are the Rodney Dangerfield of Star Trek. So that's why.
I like someone was talking about it. Like, I can't remember who it was. It must have been one of the DS9 cast talking about, or maybe it was the Ferengis up on stage, talking about how the Ferengi were like the sort of the humans, the normal people of the show. Because the whole, like, Star Trek revolves around all these people who are so amazing and perfect and do everything right. And they're super smart and pretty and talented. And it's like, we have to have some relatable characters. And that was the Ferengi. I thought that was really interesting.
Yep.
Well, and then the thing that I love about the Ferengi that they do is There's a couple episodes where they call BS on the Federation's sanctimoniousness. There's one where Quark lectures Captain Sisko, where he says, "You talk about diversity and tolerance and understanding, but you only practice it toward people who remind you of yourselves." And I just love that
That's
speech.
awesome. What a great line.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. And then, of course, the best Quark moment of all, and we're really digressing now, is when he and Garak have their conversation about root beer. I mean, that is such a beautiful piece of, and it's one of the things where, Brian, you and I were talking at the convention about how, TOS definitely had social commentary about what was going on at the time in the 60s, TNG a little bit, but sort of the Deep Space Nine and Voyager and Enterprise, they kind of became less about social commentary and more about commentary about Star Trek, right? And that's something that Deep Space Nine did really well, is saying the for 7 years on the Enterprise D, you saw humans looking at aliens, and now on Deep Space Nine, we're having aliens looking at humans.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's a really great observation, Jared.
Oh, well, just a composite of, years of valuable conversations ahead with the two of you.
Oh, such the flatterer.
Yes, we can. Me and Brian will take credit for everything that Jared ever says from now on,
Oh, thank you.
Yes,
Well,
absolutely.
just I may hold you to that when I put my foot in my mouth.
Oh
Okay,
no. Oh wait, yeah, undo, undo.
now, Brian, I wanted to ask you, did you have any personal highlights of the convention yourself? Did you meet any lifelong heroes that you got a picture with?
I did. I am not normally one to go get autographs or take pictures with the actors. I have nothing against it. It's just I'm not particularly comfortable doing it. But this year and last year, Creation has had a recreation of the TOS bridge that they had built that they use for photo ops. And this year they put the surviving members of the original cast on the set, and you could take pictures with them individually, not together. And I broke down and had my picture taken with Mr. Shatner.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks. And I have to say, he actually was absolutely fine. He said hello. We took the picture. He thanked me, and that was it. But, for years I had sort of been living in fear of how he might react if I ever encountered him.
Yeah.
And he was absolutely fine.
Oh, perfect. That's
So it was a very pleasant
good to
experience.
hear. Good to hear. I'm glad you're able to have that
Awesome.
experience.
How about you guys? What were your highlights of this show?
Mine was being on stage. Can I say
Oh, yeah, Kayla.
that?
What an interesting segue. I my under my understanding is that you were on stage at some point.
Yeah, it was awesome. We've been doing this women in Trek panel for years and years now. Mary Sherwinsky has started it, I think, 6 years ago, I want to say, and has been doing it ever since. And this was the first year that they've, first of all, it was the first year that they changed the title from Trek Girls to Women in Trek. And I was told that this took some convincing, but someone was trying to convince them. They were like, look, these people are women in their 30s. We've got a doctor on the panel. We've got, these women who've been doing this for years and years. They're not girls anymore. They call them
Right,
women.
you're
We
not
call them what
kids.
they are. So that was a big boon for us. And also the fact that it was the first year that we were on the main stage was huge for us, and it drew a much bigger crowd. And we weren't up against anyone. Often the smaller panels are up against some big star, and so everyone's in the main room for them. And this year we were on the main
Oh,
stage,
terrific.
and we had two awesome people with us that had been there before. That's Bijo Trimble, who's of course one half of the duo of the John and Bijo Trimble, who were responsible for the original letter writing campaign to save Star Trek in the 60s and
Yeah.
helped create the original Star Trek conventions. And
None of us would have been at that creation if it weren't for Bijo and her husband.
yeah,
No, not at all.
and she had a lot of awesome insight into like the history of women in the franchise. And then we also had Kate Mulgrew, who was awesome for helping bringing people to the conversation on stage, so she could talk about her experiences being a woman in Trek, being the
Yeah.
first featured woman captain.
And I'm sure you had a lot more bums in seats because she took the time to do that. So that was very, very magnanimous of her. As well, it's just awesome for you to be able to
Yes, it
share the
was.
stage with her.
Yeah, it was very cool. And we got a lot of really positive feedback. People saying they really appreciated what we said. They appreciated that panel was there. We were there to a packed house. And at first I thought, oh, well, this is awesome because Kate Mulgrew is here. She's going to draw all these people. We had more people than Kate Mulgrew did for her panel.
Oh, that's terrific. Yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah. So people really, I mean, that says to me that people care about the conversation.
Sure.
You know, I mean, yeah. I mean, one thing or another, if they come to see me, you know, that's neither here nor there. But the fact that they're coming to participate in this conversation about the history of women in science fiction, in science and technology, in Hollywood, and all of these issues that women have faced and are still facing, and just acknowledging those and understanding what we can do to always be better. It's so cool to see so many people coming to the table to talk about that. So I was really happy with how it went.
Absolutely.
Congratulations.
You guys had a huge turnout. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was a packed house on the main stage. Yeah. It was like, what, 5,000, 6,000 yeah. people, something like that.
Yeah, and it was a lively, engaging conversation, too. There was no lag to it, nothing. You guys were on fire for the entire time you were up there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I only wish we had, you know, time flew by so quickly, of course. But yeah, it was fun.
We should have gotten you a shirt to wear that said, follow Trek Movie on Twitter.
Well, I definitely was like, I write for Trek Movie and talked about some of the articles I've written and stuff. So that was nice.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
That's terrific. My other highlight, which, you know, obviously doesn't compare to that, is I finally was able to do the feature story that I've wanted to do for years on the Garrix Taylor Shop.
Yes, which was lovely, yeah, by the way.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah,
that
was awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I hope next time or future conventions I can do more stuff like that. This is a service that's provided for free from creation. So, you know, people get a rip in their Vulcan robe or in their Klingon sash or whatever, they come and they have someone there dedicated. And the woman I interviewed, her name is Brooke Wilkins. She is a seamstress and costume designer for a theater, right? So she's a professional. So she's using her professional skills to help people. When I was there, she was helping a Geordi fix his visor with gaffer's tape, which was just awesome. And we're from the same state, and we even had like a dozen Facebook friends in common. So it was really cool to you know, be at a convention and meet someone who, you know, knows so many of the same people I do already.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Wow.
Small world.
Very small. Very small. So thanks to them my hats off to Creation for providing that service to fans and to the people who volunteer to do that. So good for them.
And I have to say, Creation put on a nice show this year. They really did.
They did great. If you had to voice any concerns, would you want to voice any concerns about the convention?
Yeah, I would say
was there anything missing? Was there anything missing that you would like to see?
I was a little bit disappointed at the lack of both Star Trek Beyond and Star Trek Discovery content.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not Creation's fault necessarily.
Not at all.
But it's still, you know, it's a shame that CBS and Paramount aren't pushing harder to promote their stuff at Star Trek conventions. It's like, come on, this should be like the no-brainer.
Do they not understand who buys their Blu-rays and their costumes online and the action
all their
figures?
Licensed merchandise? Yeah, apparently not.
Do they not understand that at all?
And this has been an issue with the reboot all along, by the way. Like,
yes.
There's typically minimal presence at the Vegas Con. I mean, it's actually kind of bizarre how there's like almost no influence whatsoever. There's almost no influence on the convention floor. There's almost no influence in the merch room. You might see some people cosplaying, but it's like, it's almost like it's
persona non grata.
Maybe. I don't know if it's that or what it is, but like, it doesn't feel like it's associated.
Yeah, well, it's Paramount, not CBS. CBS is the license holder, and they're the ones, you know, who are running the show behind the con. So,
yeah,
but still, I mean, it's to everyone's advantage to have the Paramount stuff there. We have a movie in theaters now, and there was not a single thing dedicated to Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this brand new show coming out. Well, theoretically, there was one panel, but it ended up being pretty much devoid of any content.
Yeah, and we won't go there.
The only conversation I heard about the movie was at the panel on the worst episode ever that I went to. Some guy in a Captain Kirk bathrobe got up and grabbed the microphone and said, "The reason that Star Trek Beyond is better than Star Trek Into Darkness is because we complained about it so much."
Right, bro.
And I'm like, "Okay, you are not the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, and I don't, and so you're not like changing the world here."
He had a dream, Jared.
He did. He did. He had a dream of a Star Trek movie with a title that didn't make me roll my eyes till they fell out of their sockets. Sorry, I hate that title so bad. But anyway, that's all that I heard about Star Trek Beyond at the entire convention.
Okay, so but speaking of the lack of Beyond and Discovery news, I know that we're hoping to see more Discovery news at the upcoming convention, Mission New York, which is in two weeks in New York City. So that it was too bad that there wasn't anything. I mean, so Brian Fuller, quote unquote, beamed in to Star Trek Las Vegas and gave sort of boilerplate. So, I mean, it was cool that he was there at all, but I wish we had gotten something more. And he was just like, "Oh, it's going to be great. Watch the show." And that was it. It was like a 30-second clip that they showed. And then, you know, of course, what a week or whatever it was later, there was this big...
Not even, like 3 days later. Yeah, 3 days later.
There was a press junket where he revealed tons of details. And it's like, you couldn't give us one of those things?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At a trick con?
Yeah, I mean...
That CBS is supposedly running?
Yeah, that kind of, to be honest, rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah. Well, and, you know...
You didn't have to give us all the info. I get you have to go into the mainstream and sell this to the mainstream public as well. I get that. But, like, something, like, maybe really nerdy, like, the timeline...
Yeah.
The general public doesn't care about that.
Yeah.
But Star Trek fans do. Mm-hmm. Like, you could have thrown us that bone. You know what I mean? Like, little stuff like that.
For sure.
The people would have been thrilled just to get that.
For sure. That would have been the biggest news of the con by far. And there's going to be an entire panel dedicated to Star Trek Discovery at Mission New York. But it's not clear. I think something newsy is going to come out of that. Again, I think they're going to be saving a lot of the big news for the mainstream audience, which is really unfortunate. As Brian said, it kind of feels a little crappy, especially when Les Moonves is out, the CEO of CBS is out there talking about how the fans are the ones who are going to be monetizing the show. You know, his platform for selling CBS All Access this whole time has been Star Trek has a huge fan base and like they will pay money to see Trek stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, to hear that and then on the other hand have them giving all of the big news to only to the mainstream quote unquote press rather than Trek cons. It's a little disappointing, but
Yeah.
The other thing is he could have just left like, okay, yeah, we don't need to belabor the point. You're right. So Mission New York.
Mission New York. Nick Meyer will be there with
Kristen Beyer,
okay. Will be at the convention as the representatives of Star Trek Discovery. We have no idea what they're going to say or if they're going to say much of anything. It'll be exciting. It's obviously the main attraction of this upcoming convention. I just hope we get something to chew on, even a little bit, you know?
I think there's going to be something. I think there's going to be a little something. That's my guess, putting that out there.
Yeah, I wouldn't think they would bother flying the two of them out to New York if they weren't going to at least disclose a little something.
Yeah. Well, while we're on the topic of new Trek being both Discovery and Beyond, while we're talking about how there isn't any new stuff coming out of the cons, there is new stuff happening in those worlds. So why don't we talk about that a bit?
Absolutely. I think we're at this point, everyone's seen Star Trek Beyond. I don't know if anyone wants to talk necessarily about the film itself. The thing I wanted to talk about is it's a box office performance. Specifically,
I hear a groan from Brian over there.
Yeah. So there's this awesome article on boxofficemojo.com right now. It's called Trek versus Trek versus Trek. And it gives you all the information on Beyond and then the two antecedent movies in this iteration of the franchise, so you can look at how they're comparing. And there's no data point on which Star Trek Beyond is doing well compared to the other two.
Ouch.
Just to give you the overhead, okay, so the production budget for 2009 was $150 million. The budget for Star Trek Into Darkness was $190 million. And then for Star Trek Beyond is $185 million. And that's just for the production. That doesn't include marketing. And as it stands now...
I said, right. You could easily throw $100 million on top.
Easily.
For marketing purposes.
Easily.
Wow, really? Jeez.
Oh
Oh
yeah.
yeah,
Yeah.
easily. Maybe more.
Some of the things I've heard is that whatever the production budget is, you probably spend double that on marketing.
That's incredible. I had no idea.
Oh yeah, it's
Marketing budgets is what's crippling the movie business.
Huh.
And actor
It's not
sa
actually the production
and
budgets, it's the marketing.
actor salaries too, I think aren't
Yeah.
helping either.
I can see that.
But that's not as much for this one because nobody's really taken home that big of a chunk of change. So in terms of performance though, the world the domestic gross for 2009 still is the best at 257 million. Into Darkness only got 228 million. Star Trek and Beyond right now is standing at 141 million, right? So it's desperately lagging.
Domestic, yeah.
Domestic, worldwide, Star Trek 2009 did 385 million. Into Darkness did much better at 467 million, and Star Trek Beyond is only at 213 million. Now, I did a little math before we started, and I looked at all the countries that into that I'm sorry, the Star Trek Beyond has not yet been released in, and how well Into Darkness performed on those. So, today, as we're recording this, August 17th, it opened in France, and then other countries it has yet to open in. There's a variety of them, a lot of them, some in Europe, some in Asia, some in South America. The big markets that it hasn't opened up yet in are China, South Korea, and Japan and Mexico.
Except South Korea, it just opened in South Korea a couple days ago.
Depending, yeah. Well, the premiere was it. The thing I see is that it doesn't open in South Korea till
Well,
August
till
18th,
tomorrow. Yeah, till tomorrow.
tomorrow. So that we got a time delay
Okay.
thing. But yeah, okay. So it's opening that one too. But we don't have any returns for it yet. But I added
Correct.
up the box office returns for all the countries that Star Trek Beyond hasn't opened in for how well that Star Trek Into Darkness did. And the total for that was 110 million, 112 million, I guess. So if Beyond does exactly the same in these markets as Into Darkness did, its total worldwide gross will be about 325 million when all is said and done, right?
Wow.
Which is less than 2009 and way less than Into Darkness.
Dang. I'm surprised. What about the critical reviews, though? Critics and non-critics reviews, because certainly in Trekkie circles, best of the three is a phrase that I've heard very, very often.
Which
Oh yeah, well, I
I would
completely
agree
agree with
with.
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. My review is that this is the best of the reboot series. It captures
Yeah.
the heart of Star Trek. It's adventure, it's action with a purpose, blah blah blah. We could go on and on.
And I
So
also think the art direction in this is easily the best. I mean, I thought the whole presentation of the Yorktown was just beautiful.
why does a
Yeah.
good movie not equal a good box office return?
Brian, what insights do you have on that? I've kind of talked too much
Well,
already.
the marketing, I think, was bad.
Yeah,
I think
and
they
that's
got
something we've
started way
talked a
too
lot
late.
about.
I think that was part of it. I think it's also swept up in the general box office malaise that we're seeing this summer.
Yeah, that's true
Yeah. I
too.
think it's caught part of
There's
that.
nothing performing well right now,
And
is there?
the only movies that have
not
done well
really.
are this summer are Captain America and Finding Dory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and Suicide
Yeah.
Squad. Suicide Squad has done
I
very
thought
well.
that did terribly.
Yeah,
No,
but
Suicide
that's
Squad.
kind of.
I mean, its first weekend was the most successful weekend in August ever.
Oh,
Yeah,
maybe it
but
was
the
just because I
second
was
week
reading
it dropped like a
the
rock.
reviews were really, really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, maybe the third thing possibly was that Into Darkness damaged the reboot
I
brand
absolutely.
Yeah, that's too
with
bad.
some of the fan base. Not so much with the general public. I don't think they care one way or the other, but like but the part elements of the fan base I think got very turned off by Into Darkness
Yeah.
and kind of just gave up. So, or it could be none of those things. Who the hell knows? It's people have been driven to distraction for a century trying to figure out how to predict box office performance. So who knows?
The other thing, okay, and I hate to say this, but there were those who speculated that the tragic death of Anton Yelchin, which got a lot of press for the movie, that might have given it a little bump, the same way the death of Heath Ledger in 2008 gave a huge bump to The Dark Knight, and I don't think it helped at all. And I hate to even bring that up,
No.
but it's the kind of thing that has made a difference in the past for movies.
Yeah, but Heath Ledger was a huge star.
He
Yeah,
was. He
yeah.
was. And Dark
I mean,
Knight.
Anton is a very talented guy, but he was not, I
No.
don't think he was not
No.
a household name.
No.
He could have been in the future, I
Eventually.
mean.
I think so. I think he's the most talented member of that cast,
Oh,
actually.
interesting. Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that.
Very, very gifted young man.
Anyway, so Brian, what do you think this portends for a potential fourth installment of this this cast?
I think it's a long shot.
Really?
I think if it does happen, I think if it does happen, there's a couple of scenarios. One is that they make a movie that's basically, they have Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto already signed, and I think they have some sort of weird conditional agreement with Chris Hemsworth, too.
Oh, yeah.
So they've got those three locked in.
Yeah. Who is a much bigger star than anyone else in these movies at this point.
Right.
Yeah, most people forgot he was in 09.
Yeah.
They're like, wait, Thor is in this?
Yeah.
Well, he looked completely different, too. I think that had a lot to do with
it. Yeah, I think he's been taking some performance-enhancing drugs, Kevin. Sorry.
But he, they might make a movie that's basically just about the three of them to control the budget. Whatever happens next is going to have major budget controls.
You can't take away half the crew, though. You can't make a Star Trek movie.
I think they will. I think they will.
That's weird.
And if they can't, they won't make the movie. The reboot movies are about to fall into the same trap that the original cast in the TNG movies fell into, which is that they're going to slash the budget and they still have to pay the actors, so they would end up pouring a disproportionate amount of the budget toward the acting and the rest of the movie suffers for it.
Mm.
So I think what they'll do, if they do, I still don't think they'll make another movie, but if they do, you're going to see some recasting.
There's
no way.
Of the crew? Of the main crew?
Yes. All they've got is Pine and Quinto. They may recast everybody else.
I will interject. They have said, pointing to my prior comment, they will not recast Chekhov.
Yes.
Okay, right. That's JJ said that, right. But Ben, I'm speaking more in a general sense.
Yeah.
Like I said, though, I really don't think they're going to make another movie.
See, the thing is, though, if I could do another version of this, I think the strongest members of the cast are Carl Urban as Bones and then Simon Pegg as Scotty. I am not the hugest fan of Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto's versions of the characters. I remember, Brian, you've described the Chris Pine version of Kirk as a frat boy who kind of turns people off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Although I have to say, I liked him so much more in Beyond.
Oh, good.
Like, me, I feel like, too.
The character matured, and Chris Pine is completely settled into the role. Like, he for the first time in these three movies, he felt like Jim Kirk to me.
Oh, good. That's progress.
So, yeah, and I guess that's the sadness of this whole thing, guys. The movie's underperforming, and we actually got a movie that we all really enjoy. It's a shame.
Yeah. Also, they did so much... they did so much fan service to fans of Enterprise that they didn't need to do. I mean, to the point where they're in an NX spaceship for most of the movie. They wear the uniforms. I was expecting to see a Scott Bakula cameo at one point, to be honest.
If it wouldn't have confused the general audiences, they might have done it.
Yeah.
You know? I thought it was cool. Enterprise gets shit on so much. Cool. I like that they were like, yay, NX-01, Enterprise exists.
Yeah. No, was really cool.
Oh, and you mentioned the Zindi, too.
That's the Enterprise. That's the Prime Universe Enterprise, too, because everything that happened in the alternate timeline happened after Enterprise ended. So
they're
the same exact characters.
Yeah.
Same exact characters.
Despite whatever Simon Pegg says about having the timeline be altered in reverse, I don't buy it.
Blah, blah, blah. Right.
So with the underperformance of Star Trek Beyond, I guess it's pretty much curtains for the franchise then, right?
Ha! Except,
not so fast.
CBS to the rescue and Brian Fuller to the rescue with Star Trek Discovery coming out in January. Yay!
Yeah.
Trek back on TV, where a lot of us think it belongs. And we've been getting a lot of news about it lately. We mentioned earlier in the podcast the sort of press briefing that was held with Brian Fuller and one of the COO of the guy who's running Star Trek All Access was also there talking about All Access a bit. But Brian gave us a ton of little tidbits. So what do we know so far about Discovery?
Well, we know the timeline now. It's been pretty well established. It's going to take place 10 years before Kirk's 5-year mission on the Enterprise,
and it will be in
it kind of takes place.
It will be in the Prime timeline,
in the Prime universe.
Which is key,
Right, as we all suspected for quite a while.
Right, right.
It'll be Prime.
I don't think that came as a surprise.
And
but it's confirmed
it
now.
Will basically, yes, yeah, and it will be pretty much around the timeline that Christopher Pike was commanding the Enterprise.
Yeah, I'm on Memory Alpha right now. The Cage took place 11 years before Kirk's 5-year mission, so this will be in between the Cage and where no man has gone before.
Interesting. And but of course, it will not be set on the Enterprise. It will be set on the USS Discovery, NCC 1031. Shout out to Halloween.
Right. Which is apparently Brian Fuller's favorite holiday.
1031.
Perfect. Before we move on to other parts, I'm just intrigued by the notion of them doing another prequel, simply for aesthetic reasons.
Hmm.
Like
I think it's a challenge.
I'm very curious to see. Yeah, I'm very, it is, most definitely. I'm very curious to see how they're going to handle
it. We've talked about...
Because, you know...
No, go ahead, sorry.
No, because, you know, the Pike Enterprise is even more dated looking than the Kirk Enterprise.
Yep. Yeah,
so, like,
as well as their clothes, like those jackets that they wear, those weird wool jackets that look like they were made from World War II Navy blankets.
I kind of like the jackets.
Which is probably what they were made from.
They're probably what they were.
Waste not, want not, you know?
Yeah.
So I'll be curious to see how they clearly try to update, like, you know, how Harmon Zimmerman had to update everything for Enterprise, but not update it too much.
Yep.
You know, it's going to be fascinating. That's a real high wire act to you know, good balancing act to try to find the right tone.
Yeah, it'll be a challenge, but I think they're up to the challenge. There's a lot of really good people working on it.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that it's
I'm not worried about it. I'm just curious.
And the fact that it's not on the Enterprise is huge, too. They can do a lot more with the fact that it's on a different ship that we haven't seen before.
True, and it also does leave open the opportunity to see Christopher Pike, the Enterprise, and his young first officer named Spock.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. And so also about the timeline, we should mention that we know that it will revolve around some event that's part of Star Trek canon that we've heard of, but that we don't know much about. So there's no confirmation on exactly what event that is, but we know that it is not the Battle of Axanar. We know that it is not Section 31. That was explicitly said in the press record. It's not Axanar. It's not Section 31, and it's not about the Romulan War.
Which, that's what I would assume it would be the Romulan War.
Yep, Brian Fuller said...
The Romulan War is so far in the past, though.
Yeah.
Like, the Romulan War takes place, I think, something like 100 years
before TOS. Before Balance of Terror, yeah.
Could have something to do with Klingons?
Maybe.
Maybe. We don't know.
Maybe the Doomsday Machine? I don't know. See, but that's the kind of thing, that's the kind of little gem that he should have left at the convention, is that little thing for Trek fans to say. It's something you know about, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. Because then people like us and everyone else on the internet and everyone else in their conversations at the water cooler or wherever is able to have these conversations.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Throw us a bone once in a while, you know?
You know what, though, what was super awesome about, besides just revealing the timeline, like, that was cool, but to me, the coolest thing was when Brian Fuller was talking about the characters that are going to be in the show. I'm super intrigued.
Yes.
I mean, a big announcement for the fact that the lead is going to be a female, she's going to be human, and there's going to be at least one gay, openly gay character on the show. But the most intriguing part to me was the fact that our leading woman is not the captain. She's a lieutenant commander.
Yes.
Yes. I'm so grateful for that.
I thought that was fascinating, too.
I love it. It's like a lower decks kind of a viewpoint. Yeah. Like, we get to watch her struggle and grow. And Fuller, quote what he said at the strength, he said, quote, we've seen six series from the captain's point of view. To see a character from a different perspective on the starship, it gave us richer context. So... That's super cool. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to that. I don't even know who she is, and I already feel like I can identify with her.
Sure.
That's great.
Let's hope she's an earth sciences specialist.
Ooh, yeah. Geology lead.
Mm. Yeah. No,
people don't care about rocks enough. Not sexy enough.
What?
Mm.
Maybe if she was a volcanologist.
There we go.
Yeah, no, I'm the whole premise is really, really cool. I'm glad they're shaking it up a little bit.
Yeah, see, I had wanted it to take place in between Undiscovered Country and Farpoint, which I think I'd mentioned before.
Yeah, we had been
But
talking about that for a while. I think that was all of us were kind of thinking that would be really cool.
yeah, I think there's more material to mine there, but by the same token, there are more constraints there. So the idea of saying the only thing that you've seen so far is Enterprise and the cage, you know, that gives them a little bit more earth to till.
Sure.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but didn't it, this is still considered sort of an anthology series, right? We're not sure if this is going to go beyond one season, right? They may shift into something else.
I don't
Or
know.
is this like ongoing? Like, I didn't hear any kind of clarity regarding that.
I think what they'll do is they'll do a season and see what people think about it and then make their decision.
Kelly, you didn't hear anything?
I'm checking this just in case because Brian Fuller did say at one point that it's not an anthology series, and this was
See.
after all of the rumors coming out
Right.
that Devin Faraci posted over at Birth Movies Death about how this would be between Undiscovered Country and Next Generation. Fuller came out in June and said, no, that's not the timeline,
They refuted
and
it,
that
right.
it's not going to be an anthology series.
Okay.
Yeah, it says, here's the quote here. Fuller said, quote, I've read that this is an anthology show, which is not accurate.
Okay. Cool. That's all I wanted to know.
Yeah. I think it would have been cool if it was, to be honest. I really had liked
I
that rumor.
agree.
I was
I
really
agree.
digging that idea.
Yeah, the idea of jumping around a different era of Star Trek's history has a lot of appeal to it.
Yeah.
Well, there's also a lot of appeal because there's so much that they could do, and there's less commitment to have to make the same thing work for 178 episodes. I think one season of Captain Sulu is reasonable, but 4 or 5 years of Captain Sulu, maybe that's more than we need.
Yeah.
I don't even. I could give me an
And
episode that's enough Captain Sulu for me, to be honest.
oh, okay, flashback, flashback,
I
flashback,
have to agree
Voyager.
with that. Yeah, see, Flashback was the episode that kind of convinced me that I didn't really want to see a Captain Sulu
Oh
series. Just
wow. Oh
like
wow.
I'm sorry, but I do not want to see a
Don't
Captain
say it.
Worf.
Don't say it. Yeah.
Hashtag
The
we need a
other
Worf.
thing is there's an episode of Deep Space Nine, I can't remember the name. It'll come to me when I'm trying to fall asleep, where Worf is and Dax are on a mission, and Worf makes a decision that Dax is more important than completing the mission. The mission fails, and Captain Sisko explicitly says to him, "You will never receive a command because of this." And I'm sorry, but when the emissary says something, the emissary has said something.
He's infallible.
Oh, that's good. But getting back to the idea of maybe if it had it been an anthology, what also would have been cool is you tend to get you might get actors that would have otherwise not been available.
Because they'll commit to one
Who?
season instead
Great
of
point.
Right.
five.
All you have to do is commit to 13 episodes.
Yeah.
So, you know, but so who the hell knows? Who knows what he's got up his sleeve, Mr. Fuller?
I think he's got a lot going on that he's not telling us, and I think he's just giddy about this whole Star Trek thing. Every time you see him talk about it, he's just like grinning from ear to ear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Brian is one of us, so.
Yep, one of us.
Hey, one of us. Which we
Okay.
haven't had in a while, you know?
It's
Yeah.
refreshing.
Someone who, yeah, it's most refreshing.
If we, I'll just go around. If we could have one character from the main, from previous series, who could guest star on this, who could make a cameo in terms of both what you'd want to see and would be most plausible to see, who would it be?
Character or actor?
Let's say character.
From another series. Well, we kind of have to stay within that the general
Yeah,
premise of
so
that
you're
timeline.
either
Maybe like a
Enterprise or
TOS.
TOS.
Well, the one I'll start with is Guinan. I mean, Whoopi Goldberg came out and said that
Yes. Oh, I'd love to see Guinan.
that she'd be open to visiting.
Yeah, hashtag bring back Guinan.
See, that's more a little more
Yep.
exciting than we want more.
I tend to
That'd be
agree,
cool.
because Guinan is super rad. And it doesn't have to
Yeah.
revolve around her. She can just
Yep.
pop in and be like, hey, I'm super
Yep.
mysterious Aloran.
I know things, but I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah, pretty
Yeah,
much.
exactly. And then, of course, if you know, the people said it's about Voyager 2, they could obviously do Q because of his mastery of space and time. And to bring back both Guinan and Q in an episode, and where we see the origin of their hostility, which we see in Q
Yeah,
Who and Deja Q would be terrific.
Yeah, we can watch him do some more jazz hands to one another.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing, though. Delancey is going to have to get a wig or something if he wants to play Q again.
Yeah.
Although I actually don't care. He could show up bald for all I care. He's John Delancey, and he's awesome.
Yes, he is. I think nobody did more to embiggen their role that they were handed by Gene Roddenberry than Delancey did.
Oh my God, it's amazing what he did with it.
The
He had the
other,
perfect amount of pithiness.
yeah, exactly. With just this kind of barely restrained contempt, and sometimes not so constrained, but then also this kind of Loki-ish just delight in his own mischief.
Yep.
Now, another option they could bring is the host of the Dax symbiont that would have been at the time, and I'm looking on Memory Alpha. By my math, it would have been Emony Dax.
Are
He's not the one
they
that you've
that
heard
long
about.
lived? The Trill?
Dax is 350 years old in Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
And
Right, and remember, she was around during TOS because she had a relationship with
Yes,
McCoy.
and the one who had a relationship with McCoy was Emony Dax. So
Right.
they might introduce that. And then, if
That'd
they
be
had a,
super cool.
referring to my previous statement also, if they were to have a cameo of Dr. McCoy played by, say, Carl Urban in one episode, I think that would be okay.
Yeah.
That may be infeasible,
Or
but I think that everyone would love that.
yeah.
how about Bruce Greenwood as Pike?
Yep, that's another option. That's something that I definitely think they might do, like in the first episode to kick things off. Because they're going to have a cameo in the first episode. There's going to be
You
an
think?
encounter Farpoint-esque scene. Oh yeah, like that scene where with McCoy and Data. That is gold right there. That is gold pressed
All
lightning right
right, all
Yeah.
right. Jared's laying it down now. We
I'm
will
laying it
see
down.
in January if you are correct, sir.
Well, I was wrong about them talking about polarizing the hull plating in Star Trek Beyond, but there was so much other Enterprise stuff that it more than made up for it.
Yeah, I agree. You were essentially right with that, I would say.
Oh,
I would give you
yep.
that one, to be honest.
Thank you. Thank you. Essentially right.
All right, guys. Well, we're
We got a lot of good stuff ahead of us,
We do.
got a
guys.
lot of
Very
good stuff
exciting
ahead of
times. Very
us,
exciting times.
and I'm looking forward to everything.
Yep.
Absolutely.
It's a good time to be a Trekkie.
It is. It is,
Yep.
and I'm sure we'll revisit these topics a lot more in the next few months before Discovery hits the airwaves, so to speak.
For sure.
Yep.
As we learn more.
All righty, well, I think that concludes episode 21. This is our Return of the Archons episode. That was the 21st episode of TOS.
Awesome, I like this. We
So,
should do this every episode.
I know, I always mean to do it every episode I forget.
All right,
So
Return
we'll
of the
try to do that
Archons.
in the future.
All right.
So go rewatch that tomorrow.
Okay, will do.
All
All
right,
right.
thanks everybody.
See you next time, guys.
Bye,
Bye-bye.
everybody.
Captain's log, stardate 3192.1. Trying to find some trace of the starship Archon that disappeared 100 years ago, a search party has been sent to the planet below. Spock, those power readings you took, are they
powerful enough to destroy a starship?
There's another one. We gotta get out of here. You know what they're capable of. Only you.
I am Landru. For the good of the body, you must die.